Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest today is Justin Michael. Justin, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were drafted the very same day that I asked if you'd be on recording. So this is like incredible turnaround. So I thank you for that. So tell the people a little bit about yourself, Justin.
Yeah, well, it helps that it was a lazy Sunday, so...
Well, that's true. Doesn't hurt. Good. Always good to watch an episode of Star Trek on a little Sunday.
Yeah. So I'm a developer and a designer, and I'm doing a lot of things behind the scenes right now. I don't really have anything that's launched quite yet, but one of the things that I do that's in public is that I edit Less Than or Equal, which is my wife Aline Sims' podcast. So I would recommend you check that out because it's a really good show.
I would recommend that as well. She has been a guest on this very podcast, and she appears on the Incomparable umbrella of shows. So now we've got you into the Incomparable family. This is your foray into incomparableness.
Yes.
It's very exciting.
It is. Quite exciting.
But we're not here to talk about the exciting new podcast vistas that have opened up for you, Justin. We're here to talk about Star Trek. Specifically, we're going to talk about Star Trek The Next Generation episode from Season 5 called The Next Phase, which is episode 24 for those people keeping track at home. But before we jump into that, we should just talk about your general interest in Star Trek. And I was going to say that I don't know if you're a fan of Star Trek, but before we started recording, you told me that you were. So now we need to quantify, because it's highly scientific here on Random Trek, your fandom level. And so I will use my patented gauge here, which is you are a 1 if you kind of are familiar with Star Trek, and you are a 10 if you have attended a Star Trek convention dressed up as a Star Trek thing, whatever that may be. So where would you place yourself on that scale?
Well, that would be a 10 then.
Ah, see, there you go. So now this opens up a whole new line of questioning. So I'm curious, what did you dress up as?
Just a Starfleet officer. I grew up watching The Next Generation, and it was a very integral part of my life, and I learned a lot of lessons from it. You know, everything you need to know you can learn from Star Trek.
It's true.
You know, so it really helped to shape a lot of the way I view the world. It helped to spark an interest in science and logic and, you know, trying to investigate and explore and expand knowledge and things like that. And I really loved, you know, Starfleet's overall mission of exploration and, you know, just generally trying to improve the way the universe was for humans and aliens and everyone else that they came across. So I always wanted to be a part of that. I always wanted to be someone who could help bring change for the better. And, you know, being a Starfleet officer, you know, in that universe was the main way you did that. So I've been to a few conventions, and I believe it was just the one time, it may have been twice, that I just went as a Starfleet officer from the Next Generation era.
But what family of officer were you? Were you command, engineering, science, medical?
Well, I was a command officer, obviously,
of course
you want your own ship and you want to command it and you want to be the one at the forefront of that exploration. So that's where I was.
Were you a captain as well?
I think I was. I was trying to remember what rank insignia I had. I may have been a commander. I may have had less lofty ambitions at that point. You know, there was definitely a phase where I'm like captain or nothing, but yeah.
Well, you just wanted to work your way up to the captain. So you weren't ready, but you were putting in the effort, and getting to commander is not a hard, it's not an easy feat. It brings to mind that episode, was it Inner Light, where Q chose, yes, it was, where Picard was not, you know, he didn't get killed by the Nausicaans, so he didn't take risks for the rest of his life, and he ended up being stuck at command.
No, that was Tapestry, actually.
Oh, see, look at this.
Yeah.
My knowledge. I'm getting old, Justin. This is what happens.
You know, I'm not too good with the titles of them, but the only reason I remember the title of that one is because at the end, you know, Picard is telling Riker at the end, like he was describing what had happened, and he was talking about how he found that when he pulled at the thread of, you know, one of these loose threads in his life, it unraveled the tapestry of his life. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a fantastic way to just tie up that title right at the end there. I bet the writers were just pleased as punch when they figured that one out.
There were a lot of high fives in the writer's room.
Oh, yeah. But it worked. It worked. And I remember that title because of it.
And it's a good episode. In fact, I should have remembered that because that is the very first episode of Random Trek with Jason Snell. We talk about tapestry.
That's right.
But I'm horrible at remembering episode titles. So, as anyone who's listened to this podcast knows, I'm also horrible at remembering the names of quadrants. So everybody relax.
Yeah. Well, we should probably talk about the episode we're here to talk about.
we'll get there.
Talking about all this other stuff.
I have one more question, and then we'll talk about the next phase. I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I always ask everybody. What is your – if you had to pick, and I'm going to ask you to pick, your favorite Star Trek series, what would you pick?
It depends. It fluctuates back and forth between The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that The Next Generation is the one I grew up with. So it's always got that like special place in my heart that, you know, again, that formative influence and everything. But I really love the like large arcs of storytelling, those like multi-episode, even multi-season storylines that stretch out and, you know, they're all interconnected and like you can go really deep and you can go, you know, so much further with a story when you have multiple hours to tell it in that format. So I really like Deep Space Nine for that reason. So, you know, it depends on the day you ask.
Well, fair enough. I was going to say I'm asking today, but that's all right. I will take both of those because I think that I have the same exact answer myself. So,
Today, of course, it's The Next Generation because I just got done watching that episode and it's great.
That makes sense. So I'm going to ask, I have a new question. Usually I've been asking people once they pick their favorite series, who their favorite character on that series is, which is a fun question. I think it's even more fun to ask who your least favorite character on The Next Generation is. It doesn't have to be like a bridge crew person. It could be any kind of any character, really. I mean, there are no rules. We don't make rules here.
Least favorite. That's a tough one.
I know a lot of people pick Q because a lot of people don't like Q. I personally like Q. But.
No, I like Q as well. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, tough questions here at Random Trek.
You do. Like they all have their place, and they all fit in some way, and they're all useful for telling stories in different ways. I mean, I was about to say Barclay, but I really like the episode where, you know, the aliens zap him and he gets like hyper intelligent.
He becomes super Barclay.
Yeah, and then I really like the way they expanded his character in Voyager. So. Mm-hmm. I can't really say him. Wow. I don't know. That's really, really hard. Maybe the, what was her name? Nurse Ogawa in sickbay. Cause nothing really ever happened with her. It's like, she was just kind of there. And then like in the last episode, she gets pregnant and then she loses the baby. And then it's like, okay. You know, I don't know. I mean,
I think that's a fantastic answer, and I'm just laughing because it would not even occur to me to list Nurse Ogawa as someone who is my least favorite Star Trek character. Boy, she really grinds my gears, that Nurse Ogawa.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like none of them really grind my gears, but like...
But she doesn't do anything for you because
She's just there enough to make you wonder what the possibilities were, and then the series ends. You know, it's like, eh. Actually, wait. Maybe one of the like really early Ferengi from like season one.
Oh,
that might top it actually, because those are kind of grating now that you mention it.
It's true. I mean, Ferengi are a divisive race in general, but early season one Ferengi there's no redeeming qualities whatsoever in those.
Yeah,
Ferengi.
They're rough.
They are. It's the whole first season of TNG is rough, but the Ferengi not a high point.
Right.
Although I'm glad they once again Deep Space Nine they kind of turned around the Ferengi.
Definitely.
Well, at least they fleshed them out, completely changed them, really. Although that happened in TNG as well. But there are still some problematic things with the Ferengi.
Yeah, you think about, you know, season one of The Next Generation with the Ferengi with those blue space whips. And then, like, at one point when I was watching Deep Space Nine, I tried to picture Quark wielding one of those, and I just couldn't. I was like, it just doesn't work at all.
I'm kind of sad that they got rid of the blue space whips. I enjoyed those. They made no sense, which is kind of why I enjoyed them. But
right.
I would like to see Rom, you know, kick somebody out of Quark's bar with a blue space whip.
Yeah.
That'd be a great episode of Deep Space Nine. And then Odo would come and have to confiscate it. That would be a beeline story. But still, I think I could see it happening. But let's talk about, okay, now we are verging way off course here.
Yeah, we are.
I'll bring it a little bit back to the episode that we're talking about, the next phase, which includes a character that was at one point going to be a main character at some point in later seasons of TNG, but then I'm sure there are people who know why, but I don't know why, but it never worked out. And I'm talking, of course, of everyone's favorite, or maybe second favorite Bajoran, Ensign Ro, Kieran Reese being everyone's favorite Bajoran, I think.
Yeah, Ensign Ro is such a fantastic character. Like, there's depth there. There's a history there.
Mm-hmm.
The actress, I her name escapes me right now, but she just does a phenomenal job with the character. One of my favorite characters in the series.
And I think she is so interesting, and I was pondering this as I was watching this episode, because she's in it, and she plays a big part in it, obviously. And it made me think of Reginald Barclay, who you just mentioned. And I think of these two characters together as kind of similar, even though they are, on the surface, completely wildly opposite, right? But they both share this kind of maybe otherness might be too strong a word, but they are kind of – they stick out in the crew of the Enterprise, right? Everybody on the Enterprise is super competent and very confident, but also play by the rules. They do their job. They're highly professional. Reginald Barclay, very smart, does his job, but super socially awkward. You know, he's always makes you a little cringe a little bit, especially in TNG. Ensign Ro is good at her job, but she really kind of bristles at the command structure, and she thinks that she knows better than everyone. And very early in this episode, they're going to beam over to this disabled Romulan ship, and Commander Riker's like, everybody leave your weapons here because we don't want them to think we're attacking them. Mm-hmm. And Ensign Ro's like, that's a bad idea. And Riker's like, excuse me? And she's like, oh, never mind, Riker. And that kind of sums up her character. She's kind of like bristly. She's a prickly pear.
Yeah, that's a really interesting, you know, lens to look at it through, Reginald and Ro. Like, they're both different ways to explore, like, the fringes of Starfleet and, like, who can just barely get by. Like, mm-hmm. who can just, like, barely make it through the academy and barely fit into this structure that they've made. And it really helps lend, like, a realism to the whole universe, really, and especially Starfleet, where, you know, it's like not everyone is, you know, crackerjack Starfleet officer. You've got some that are, you know, they're Starfleet officers, but they're just barely making it by for whatever reason.
Yeah, they're not the top of the line, although they are on the Enterprise, which is the flagship of Starfleet. So you would think that they must have some compelling reason. And in this episode, Captain Picard says he thought that Ensign Ro would be a lieutenant commander by now if she hadn't been, you know, busted down to ensign because of something that I don't remember, but I'm sure was in another episode of Star Trek that has escaped my mind. But
yeah, and it, you know, that really makes you think. Like, we're on the flagship, and we've got Reg, and we've got Ro, and we've got all these, you know, these other misfits that come and go from time to time. It makes you wonder, like, you know, the old Excelsior class that's floating around out there. You know, who's crewing that, you know, like who's in engineering, making sure the magnetic fields are in alignment? Like, really? Really? All right.
Well, I think this best is shown in Star Trek II, right? Because you've got the Enterprise, everybody's going off about their business. And then you've got the Reliant. They are just sent off to look for a dead planet, and they can't even do that right. And they're like, does it really have to be entirely lifeless? Can't it just have a little life? And they're like, no, the only thing we need is a lifeless planet. So, you know, and that doesn't end well for that crew. So,
no.
Yeah. It makes me think that every ship other than the Enterprise is not really crewed that well.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. So she makes that remark, and then they beam over. And, like, I hadn't watched this episode in a while, and it struck me how rough that first few scenes were on the Romulan ship, because they rush through that like really quickly. It's like they beam over, Riker starts talking to the Romulan, Ro and Geordi just bend down and they're like, we're just gonna pull open this panel on this Romulan ship where we've barely said hello, and we're just like pulling equipment out of things and like poking it with our instruments and stuff. It's like, whoa, guys, number one, these are the Romulans. Number one, number two, you haven't even like introduced yourselves yet, and you're just pulling stuff apart. And it's like, really? Like, that really threw me off, because the rest of this episode especially is so well put together and so well timed and has such, you know, a level of attention to detail, where it's like this first part really threw me off because my memory doesn't remember. You know, I don't think back to that first scene where it's all awkward, but I was looking at it with more of a critical eye for the show today, and I was like, wow, that there's a big difference there.
Yeah, it's pretty clear they just want to get somebody had the idea of this is spoiler alerts, people. that it'd be cool if there was some kind of transporter problem, and Ensign Ro and Geordi are out of phase, so everybody thinks they're dead, but they're walking around like ghosts, but nobody can see them. Mm-hmm. And they just need to get to that point, right? So the Romulans, finding the Romulans, getting on the ship, picking up the, like, ripping out their, an important part of their engine without really asking anybody, and then transporting away, is the point, is the MacGuffin, right? To get us to,
right,
creepy space ghosts. But I feel like there could have been, you could have a whole nother episode of Star Trek, and I'm a fan of the Romulans, so I kind of would like to have had more Romulans in this. Where you have the, you know, the negotiation about trying to help them, and there's tension, but they really are just kind of like the Romulan, even though this Romulan ship has like a super top secret cloaking device on it. Mm-hmm. And the Romulans are kind of cool with them poking around and opening random latches and all kinds of stuff.
Well, they're not cool with it, as we find out later, but yeah. I mean, that first scene is just like, it's a little off the rails.
But that gets us to the point where they need to get back onto the Enterprise with the – I have the Memory Alpha page open, so I know that they have taken a graviton generator. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would not have remembered that. Oh, and I also – this now also tells me that Ronald D. Moore wrote this episode, who is responsible for a lot of Deep Space Nine and Battlestar Galactica. So good on you, Ron Moore. I'm surprised it wasn't a Klingon vessel that they beamed onto.
Oh, that's a good point.
But he loves the Klingons.
He does. Yeah. He's a good writer. He's one of my favorites. He does good work.
Yeah, he's really... And spoiler alert, I like this episode. And I know, Justin, you did as well. So,
oh, yes.
That's usually I ask at the end, but, you know, it's a good, fun episode.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have had some more stuff in it, but they have a time limit, just like we do. So we need to keep going. But
yeah, we do.
So... I'm getting all these tangents. So exciting. So they beam over, and we see a lot of – actually, there are two crew members that get a lot of attention. Well, maybe not a lot of attention, but their names get mentioned, and they are people we've never met before. Transporter Chief Brosmer is the person who is responsible for transporting Ensign Ro and Geordi LaForge and this mysterious piece of equipment to the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Sadly, she loses them, but it's not really her fault. And she thinks they're dead. And nobody seemed all that upset.
Well, these are professionals, you know? Like, it's true. It's all about, like, we got to focus on the mission. You know, there's time to grieve later. And that whole thing has been brought up in other episodes where it's, you know, I remember one episode with Wesley where he's like, they just lost some people, and he's like, you know, doesn't it? Oh, when the Borg were attacking, like the first time they encountered them, they cut out that circle, which was so awesome, by the way.
Yes.
You know, but they pull that thing out and they lose like 13 people or whatever. And Wesley's like struggling with it. And Geordi's explaining to him, like, you know, we have a job to do. We can mourn later when the job is done, but the job has to come first.
Right. And they set up this where the core of the Romulan vessel is basically a ticking time bomb. So they need to help the Romulans or else both the ships will blow up and lots more people will die. So they kind of are – they don't have time to grieve and they have to keep going. Mm-hmm. But spoiler alert, they're not dead.
Nope.
This episode did not kill Geordi, a main character from The Next Generation. and Ensign Ro, who is a frequent character. But they have turned them into space ghosts. But they are, I guess they're not really ghosts because they're alive. But an interesting thing in this episode is that they don't know that. Well, Ensign Ro doesn't know that they're not dead. And so she's walking around. We find out, you know, Ensign Ro comes to consciousness outside of sickbay. She's walking around. She sees a bunch of people in the corridors. Nobody greets her.
Just real quick, before we get too far away from them appearing. So, like, the transporter accident happens, and, like, both Geordi and Ro are at random locations on the ship. They're not in the transporter room. They've been, like, thrown asunder or whatever. And it made me realize, like, wait a minute. They beamed up Ro and Geordi and the piece of equipment, right? So there's a phased piece of equipment sitting somewhere in a Jefferies tube on the Enterprise for the rest of time, like until that ship was destroyed. Like, it's just rattling around down there, you know, banging around, not causing any problems because it's phased, you know, but it's somewhere in there, little Romulan piece of technology.
Maybe they have, because they use some kind of beam or something to decontaminate the areas later on. So maybe, given that it's, I imagine, some kind of top secret Romulan piece of equipment, they may have just washed this radiation over the entire ship, because apparently it has no ill effects other than to dephase people.
Yeah, you'd think something that powerful would, you know, have something, but I guess.
No, you could just do it to a room full of people super high concentrations and everything's fine.
That's cool.
So maybe that they got that piece of equipment somewhere, but I kind of rather that it's kind of like wedged under someone's bed or something, and they have no idea it's there because it's
famous. I like to think that they just totally forgot. It's just totally forgot. Yeah. So, but we
it does bring
going.
Up a minor quibble with this episode, and that's what Star Trek fandom is all about, though, because they're phased, right? So they can walk through. They discover they can walk through stuff. But shouldn't they, like, fall through the floor?
Oh, I've got several lines of notes about this. Like, minor quibble. I thought we were going to talk about this for the majority of the episode. Like, why don't they fall through the floor? And
I don't know.
It's like, and at one point, like, there's, you know, we're skipping ahead a little bit here, but there's also a phased Romulan. And mm-hmm. The first time we see the phased Romulan, he's sitting in a chair. How are you sitting in the chair?
Maybe his chair got phased as well.
I guess. But then you think about it, and it's like, well, wait a minute. How are they talking? Like, how are they interacting with the air around them? And if they can hear each other, why can't anyone else hear them? And wait, how are they breathing? Is the air just like, are their lungs not phased? Why, you know?
Well, I thought for a moment that they didn't need to breathe anymore because they were phased, and that doesn't make any sense, but no, neither does phasing. So I thought, why don't they just walk through the hull and just kind of like jump into, because at some point they need to get back onto the Romulan vessel. So it's like, why don't they just jump over there and, you know, kind of swim around? And they don't, but then that made me think, well, maybe, do they have to breathe? Can they do that? And they answer that question because later on in the episode, they find out this other face Romulan has followed them onto the Enterprise, and Geordi basically throws him off the Enterprise, and he floats off into space and he dies. Which is kind of not nice, but he was not a very nice Romulan. So
he was not a nice Romulan. But yeah, like, I remember watching this episode, and the first time I watched it, I was like, ooh, that was a really good episode. That was great. Like, I was pumped up and I was happy. And then I remember the second or third time I watched it, I started to ask myself these questions. Because, again, that science aspect has always been one of my favorites. And I'm like, wait a minute, why don't they fall through the floor? And then, like, my mind was like, no. We're not going to ruin this episode for ourselves. So we're going to come up with reasons. And I'm like, well, okay. So maybe there's a piece of like something to do with the technology they use to create the artificial gravity. Maybe that prevents them from falling through the floor. And then, like, I spun out all these like little explanations for myself so I wouldn't like think too critically about this episode. But when I get to the breathing thing, I'm like, it just all falls apart. So I try not to think about that.
Just don't think about it. Just relax.
Yeah.
It could be, if we're spinning a headcanon here, it could be the Enterprise has structural integrity fields, right? Force fields that keep it all together. So maybe they can't go through force fields. We don't see them go through any force fields. Maybe they can't do that.
That's true.
But that still doesn't answer the whole breathing thing, which I think is the large problem.
Yeah, it's best not to think about it. For all the listeners who haven't thought about that and now it's bugging you, I'm really, really sorry.
Yes, we apologize for ruining this episode. Although, it's still, if you suspend disbelief about that part, which is really when you're watching Star Trek, you should do
You've
that
got
anyway.
It, yeah.
It's a fine episode.
It is. It's one of my favorites. It really is.
So don't think too much about breathing is what I'm saying to you. And so this is where Edson Roe, she's knocked out. She, you know, I guess when you're out of phase by a transporter malfunction, it knocks you out and flings you willy-nilly to somewhere on the ship. So she recovers from being flung willy-nilly and phased, though at this point she doesn't know she's out of phase, and she walks down the corridor, which gave us a little insight into Ensign Rose's socialization on the Enterprise, because she walks past a lot of people and nobody says hello to her. And she doesn't seem surprised. Like, obviously they can't see her, but she doesn't know that.
Yeah, so, she seems a little unhappy about it, but she does not seem surprised.
And I would think if that were Geordi walking down the hallway, he would be a little surprised that no one was like, hey, Geordi, or, you know, gave him a little nod or something. But she doesn't seem all that surprised. So I guess she's not the most popular kid on the Enterprise is what I'm saying. And then she has to sneak into she doesn't have to sneak into. She tries to go into sick bay. There you
sick
go.
Bay, yeah.
I was going to say med bay, but that's not right. But the door won't open. Because it can't, it doesn't see her, I guess. And so she's flummoxed by this. And then someone else comes in, so she sneaks in behind him, and she's like, I need help, somebody help me, and everybody's ignoring her. So at first, it looks like she's just annoyed by the fact that she thinks everyone is actually ignoring her, which makes sense, because I don't think the first thing you think is, I'm probably out of phase with the universe, no one can see me. although, if serving on the Enterprise, it might be a good guess. So she tries to get everyone's attention. Nobody sees her. She figures it out, basically. And then she goes, luckily, Captain Picard and Beverly Crusher are talking about this very incident and standing super close to one another while they're talking, which I'm sure is just because they wanted the shot of having them and then Ensign Roe hovering in between them. But I just thought, one of these people is a close talker. It would make me uncomfortable. They're basically saying, oh, no, they're both dead. How sad. And Dr. Crusher – actually, they don't say how sad. They're just both dead. Dr. Crusher's like, no, maybe they're somewhere on the Romulan ship or some other deck. And Captain Picard's like, no, trust me, Bev. We've checked everywhere. I'm out. And an odd line, I think, Beverly Crusher, I guess, expresses her grief by complaining – or maybe not complaining, but she says she hates filling out death certificates.
Well, who doesn't hate paperwork, you know?
That's true.
It's the worst thing about losing people.
And this is the point where – so Ensign Roe finds out that they're dead, and so she thinks, oh, my God, or oh, my prophets, I'm dead. See what I did there? A little Bajoran joke.
It was very good.
Thank you. You're not supposed to draw attention to your own jokes, but I was kind of proud of that.
No, that was top notch.
Thank you. And so in a fit of, I guess, a great coincidence, somehow Geordi and Ensign Roe run into each other. They're the only two people that can see each other.
Well, she went looking for him. Like after she – well, after she – thought she was she's like, oh, we're dead, you know. She's like, well, wait, it happened with Geordi. So she went looking for him, and she went to engineering, and of course that's where Geordi is, because
I guess it's a good place to look for Geordi.
Yeah, Geordi's always in engineering, right? Like where else does he go? Like he can't get a date, so
well, he's either in holodeck or in engineering.
Yeah, exactly. And Reg is probably taking up the holodeck, so
that's true.
That leaves engineering.
So they find each other, and they can hear each other, they can touch each other. And they just touch hands, people. It was a syndicated TV show, don't worry. They decide, well, Ensign Roe's like, okay, Geordi, we're dead. This is the afterlife.
And Geordi's not having it. Geordi's like, no, we are not dead. And one of my favorite lines in this episode is they're going back and forth, and she's trying to convince him, and he's just not having it. And he's like, well, wait a minute. What about my uniform? Like, are you telling me I'm some blind dead man with clothes? You know, it's like, wow, that's awesome. Because it really makes you think, like, if you did die and you were a ghost, you probably wouldn't have any clothes on. You know?
That's true. And your visor probably wouldn't work.
Yeah. You know, I love that line because it makes you think.
It does make you think. And then now it makes me think that should his visor work because they're phased? I don't really know how visors work, but
that's another little continuity thing. It's like, well, okay, so
the communicator doesn't work.
The communicator doesn't work, but the visor does. Why? And you could, and then you start going into that dark place.
We don't want to go back down breathing. That alley. Yeah, so. Exactly. No, we have to stay out of breathing alley. Yeah. So we're not going down there. And so I guess we should talk about the main thrust of this episode is about how they figure out that they're out of phase, and you know that's the big thing. The other part is there's this Romulan vessel that has this top secret thing that they've been testing out, and the Romulans decide, oh no, we can't allow the Federation to know that we're testing this thing out, so we're gonna. They set up a power beam between the Enterprise and the Romulan vessel. They are up to their tricky ways. They've accepted all of the help so far, but now they've decided they can't let the Enterprise report back on this wacky new thing that they're doing with this anti-phase cloaking device thingy.
Yeah, is Data over there yet? Or was that later?
Yeah, I think we have spent so much time talking that I'm quickly going through. But Data goes over because he wants to figure out what's happening. Ensign Ro and Geordi follow along so they can also see what's happening. And this is where we find out there's been another phased Romulan who nobody could see except for Geordi and Ensign Ro. But they don't see them. He sees them. And then he follows them back to the – it's unclear how he gets over to the Enterprise. I guess he sneaks onto the shuttlecraft and no one notices because no one's using the transporters at this point.
Yeah, well, they made a mention several times that like there were regular shuttle runs going back and forth.
Remember, that's true.
Like Data and Worf were sitting in the shuttle at one point waiting for another shuttle to clear the bay. So I imagine he just snuck aboard with you know, one of the other shuttles.
A different one. Once he realized that there were two other people who were also phased like he was.
Right.
Although apparently he is much more committed to his job than Ensign Ro and Geordi are, because he was sitting at his console the entire time. And my other quibble, I only have a small – this episode I like overall. I know I'm talking about many quibbles. But the timing of this episode seems weird too. Like it's very compressed. Things happen very quickly. But, you know, it's a TV show. Things have to happen quickly.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of, like, in-universe necessity for that because it's like, okay, they're out of phase. They can't interact with anything except air, perhaps. Anyway, but, like, they can't drink water. They can't eat food. Like, right. How long can you survive without drinking water or eating food, you know? So they have to compress
days,
it down.
I guess.
Yeah.
And which they mentioned at the end, yeah.
Yeah, he mentions at the end. He's like, you know, I didn't eat for 2 days.
So I'm going to eat all this food at our funeral. Although it looks like a pretty good funeral. So Data has basically, you know, as soon as you watch this episode and you figure out that they are out of phase, you know that Data is the one that's going to figure out what's going to happen. And especially since Geordi basically haunts Data and keeps screaming at him, come on, Data, put it all together. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Geordi, he can't hear you.
Yeah, and like at one point they're in engineering and he's trying to like create the chronoton fields for Data to – you know, follow the trail and try to put it all together and like use your imagination and stuff. And then Data zaps him with the thing and he finds out, oh, the anion beam is the thing that can dephase us. And then he tries to push through the table, the console again. And there's like a super close up of his hand going into the console. And I remember even at the time, the very first time I watched it, I'm like, they nailed that effect because he's pushing into one of the Elkar's displays and it's like this shiny reflective black area of the table and his reflection goes like up against his hand and I'm like, wow, they did a really good job with that, with him pushing into the table. And I was like, it was just one of those things that reminds you like you've got some really amazing people working on the show doing really amazing stuff.
And some of the effects, well, they redid all of the effects for the HD, the Blu-ray HD remastering. Mm-hmm. Some of the things look better than others. Special effect still stands up. I noted that as well as I was watching it today. It is interesting that, you know, you can sometimes now, because they never thought it was going to be in HD because no one ever thought about HD.
Right.
So you could see, like, fingerprints on things and you can see some props really look like props because it was never – no one ever thought you would see them as well as you can see them now. So
yeah, that was another thing about this episode for me. Like this episode is almost like tailor made to appeal to me on like 18 different levels. Like you know, toward the end they have the disruptor and they set it for overload, and one of the things I really loved about the show was the props, like the tricorders and the phasers and all this stuff. And in that scene where she's setting the disruptor to overload, you've got this real full screen close up of the disruptor. I'm like, and that was amazing for me, because I always love to see the close ups of all their technology and all their toys and all their equipment, because that was, I don't know, I was just drawn to all of the tools that they were using.
And this episode also features a close up of Dr. Crusher typing in the death certificate for Ensign Rose. So you get to see your terminal and the Elkar's interface, which doesn't look all that efficient now to modernize. But, you know, she types in something and deceased comes up.
One letter at a time.
That's right. It's very slow. It's got a lot of lag, but they need to upgrade the sick bay computers.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they find an out of phase Romulan. There's an added tension because the Ensign Ro and LaForge overhear the Romulan saying, well, we're going to create this feedback loop thing that'll get into their dilithium crystals somehow. And then when they go to warp, they'll blow up and then they'll never be able to tell anybody about this. And so, oh no, nobody can hear us, but we need to warn everybody.
And this is yet another instance where they overhear that. And Geordi makes this offhand remark. He's like, no one will ever detect this unless they run a level 3 diagnostic. And it's like, yet another time at which a level 3 diagnostic, had it been part of just the standard operating procedure, would have saved everything.
Just it's like, always run a level 3 diagnostic before you go to warp.
Before you go to warp, when you exit warp, like maybe once every hour on every system. Why not?
Also, this episode makes me think, why does anyone ever use the transporter? Nothing but trouble. The transporters are nothing but trouble.
It works great 99% of the time, you know?
Oh, it's that 1%, though. It's a killer.
It's so convenient, though. So damn convenient.
I think the sad truth is that I would still use the transporter even after hearing about all these horrific accidents, because I'm a lazy man.
Yeah, although flying a shuttlecraft would probably be pretty fun.
It did look like fun. And there was a nice scene with Geordi and Ensign Ro basically eavesdropping on Data and Worf talking about the memorial service. That was nice.
I love that conversation. You know, like those little personal moments where, you know, it's that character development stuff. It's that insight into friendships and relationships and dynamics. And that really shows, like, it gives you an opportunity to have Data explain his perspective on his friendship with Geordi, you know, in a way that you couldn't really do if he wasn't supposedly dead. And like the way they work that in there and the fact that they choose Worf to have the conversation, you know, great perspectives and just a great little exchange there.
Right. And Worf says, I don't think I'm the best person to ask about because I'm a Klingon. And Data's like, why does that matter? And he says, mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sad for Geordi. I'm happy because he died doing his job. And that's a great honor. So he is in the afterlife reaping the rewards, which makes Data start thinking about, well, maybe this memorial shouldn't be a sad affair. And turns out that they have a party instead, which is nice.
Big, huge party.
A big party with balloons and jazz music.
Futuristic pearlescent silver balloons, because future.
Yes, it's true. Those are space balloons.
Space balloons.
Or they could be members of the crew of some species that we are unfamiliar with.
I never thought about that.
So who knows?
Yeah.
So Ensign Ro and Geordi have this mission now. They figure out that they can create chronoton fields by passing through equipment, and they use this to basically get Data to figure out where they are and sweep the area with this radiation that will dephase them. So they head over. They have this conversation like, well, we are only going to be in phase for a couple of seconds, so people really have to see us. Where can we go? And that's when Captain Picard is like, I'm going to tend forward to the big memorial where everyone will be.
Yep.
Anybody want to come with me?
Providence.
Exactly. And so they go there. They blow up the disruptor to get the beam.
But before they blow up that disruptor, Rose walking around just shooting stuff at random. And
that's true.
And number one, I just love the casual way she's just like, psst, 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 you know, just everywhere, just people, things, objects, ceiling, floor, and just the casual way she was just using the disruptor was like, yeah, that's how she would be doing that at that point. And then she walks up to Riker. And I love this. Because they've had this thread through the whole episode. You know, he keeps mentioning, like, I'm going to talk about Ensign Row at the funeral. I'm going to say some words for Ensign Row at the funeral. And she's just like, she's so intrigued. She's like, what could he possibly have to say about me? And then they're doing this thing and they've got a time limit. And she's like, well, now I'm never going to figure out. And she shoots him through the head. And it's just like, oh my God, this is perfect. And it's like, you have to think, like, you know, she just doesn't care about any possible side effects, you know, even though they're phased, you know,
that,
like,
is what I thought. Maybe that's not the safest thing to do.
Yeah. Like through his brain. Really? It's,
like, yeah, maybe like through his leg or something.
Or, yeah. His arm or something.
Shoot his beard. Maybe.
No, right through the brain.
Yep. She's like, I thought that it could have taken a horrifying turn where we learned that the disruptors were not out of phase and his head explodes. That would have been a twist that I would not have seen coming.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't have seen that coming.
And then everyone would have been horrified because Riker's head just randomly exploded.
Yeah, just for no reason. Like was he playing the trumpet too hard?
Like, he was blowing too much. Another trumpet-related accident. So they figure out they blow up, they detonate the disruptor because just shooting randomly wasn't creating big enough a field. They flood the whole party with this harmless radiation, apparently. Although you've got to think that maybe a lot of those people now have cancer. And they are Ensign Ro and Geordi LaForge dematerialize, or rematerialize, I guess, or rephase. And everybody's happy. Hooray, they crash their own funeral. And everybody laughs. Oh, actually, the episode ends. Actually, everybody leaves, I guess. Ensign Ro and Geordi are at the after party. Although I would think they've been together for like 2 days, and that must be the last person I'd want to have hang out with, no matter who it is. But they're eating lots of food. Well, Geordi's eating lots of food.
Yeah, Geordi's eating lots of food. Geordi's hungry.
He is very hungry. Ensign Ro's having this very kind of, she's had a very meaningful experience because she's been raised spiritually, as all Bajorans are, but she didn't really buy into it. Now this experience has made her think about things, and Geordi says something about, oh, if it has, must be very powerful if it's made you think about your preconceived notions. And then they laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh, and the episode ends.
Yeah, and I like that line at the end where it's like, you know, maybe we should make our own inverter. If it can teach Ro Laren humility, it can do anything.
That's right.
You know, I love that line. That was it's one of those lines that at the end it puts a big grin on your face and it's like, yeah, that was a good episode. And then just the one other part that I really like is when they appear in at the funeral briefly in front of Data and Picard, and they just see them for a split second. I love Picard's reaction. He's like talking to Data. He's like, these were not ghosts. What did we see? Like, his skepticism and his refusal to believe that there's like the spirits floating around. He's just like, no, we're discounting that. What was this?
That's not even considerate.
Yeah, it calls back to Geordi's reaction to, like, we are not dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I mean, and that's an interesting thing that we didn't really talk about, and I guess probably why they picked Ensign Ro. I mean, she's a great character, but she's also a Bajoran, and she is an interesting Bajoran in that she's not super religious a lot, or spiritual. I don't know how you would describe Bajorans, but I guess they have a religion, so religious. But she has been grown up in that culture, and for the most part kind of rejected it. And now she's having this experience where she thinks, oh, well, clearly what's happening. The first thing she thinks of is we're dead and this is the afterworld and it really sucks. It's just basically us haunting our workplace. And Geordi's like, nope, is not what's happening.
You know, if she wanted to convince Geordi that they were really dead, she should have just been like, okay, if we're just, you know, if we're not dead, how are we breathing?
And he would have been like, and then his head would have exploded.
Yep.
Or he would have slowly fallen through the floor.
maybe it's like the old Looney Tunes cartoons where, like, as long as you don't look down, you're okay.
I think that's true, only in this case it's the viewer. As long as the viewer doesn't think too much about what being out of phase means, this episode is great. So as soon as you start getting obsessed about how that works, this episode falls apart in so many ways. So just don't think about that and enjoy the episode.
It's a very enjoyable episode.
And this has been an enjoyable episode, Justin, so thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's been great.